We had options to make sure the pension funds were fully funded. We chose instead to engineer a financial coup d'etat, which would make sure they weren't. And the reason it's important to change the narrative is until and unless you change the narrative, what's going to happen politically and financially is very different than if we can change the narrative back to something closer to reality. There's $21 trillion missing from DOD and HUD. If that's not a problem, why is it a problem that we only need $5 trillion to make sure our pension funds are fully funded? So can we get that money? Yes, absolutely. Not to mention the fact that if you can print $24 trillion out of thin air for the banks, you can print $5 trillion out of thin air for the pension funds, okay? You know, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to blame the victim. You're bad, you didn't save enough. Wrong. You know, you've been harvested financially in many, many cases, and you need to understand that and you need to turn the tide back.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have Catherine Austin-Fitz coming. I've been wanting to interview her for a long time, so I'm really happy she's joining the program. And we're going to talk about a lot of stuff. We're going to talk about pension funds. We're going to talk about the missing money. We're going to talk about, she also brings a lightness to the interview and talks about how we can win against the darkness, all the crap that everybody's experiencing. She's so articulate and really has a great framework for speaking about this stuff. But before I get into that, I want to share with you, if you want to get off big pharma, get off big ag. I did an interview with Marjorie Wildcraft, and they have an e-series on how to make your own medicines at home, much healthier, not chemical laden. And it's stuff that they've been learning for thousands of years. And I have a link here so you can get some free information on that. So be sure to do that. And then also for my patrons, thank you so much. I am so thankful that you're supporting the program. And Catherine sticks around and answers a question on books that can help you in this time and why she loves these books. And so she goes through a bunch of them, and I think you'll find that very enlightening. So let's get into the interview now with Catherine Austin-Fitz. Hi, Catherine. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad that you're finally here.
Hi, Sarah. It took us a while to get together.
It did, but
it was good to be with you.
Yes. Well, let's start. We're going to start with what your latest work is on, which is the pension funds.
Right.
You know, the crisis that we're facing. And your report talks about the history of it and the whole nature of it. Can you describe why you decided to go and look at the pension funds?
Well, this journey of mine started 20 years ago. In fact, when I was working with the pension funds on figuring out what they needed to do to make sure that we could make our targets. They all knew that at this time, with the baby boomers' retirement, there was going to be a challenge in making sure they were fully funded. And so so we were focused on that 20 years ago. And the reality is there were absolutely ways to do it successfully that were rejected. And instead, we had what I call the financial coup d'etat, where very significant amounts of money were moved out of the government and moved out of the economy. And we can just discuss the details of what the financial coup d'etat was. So one of the points that I wanted to make in this article was to make it clear that we don't have a pension fund crisis. What we have is a plan. In other words, we had options to make sure the pension funds were fully funded. We chose instead to engineer a financial coup d'etat, which would make sure they weren't.
And the narrative, you're trying to educate people that the narrative is different, or the real right. Reality is different than what they're telling us the narrative is.
The reality is different than what they're telling us. And it's very important to me to change the narrative. And the reason it's important to change the narrative is until and unless you change the narrative, what's going to happen politically and financially is very different than if we can change the narrative back to something closer to reality. So as you know, I do a lot on how much money has gone missing from the federal government. And if you read the piece on the pension funds, at the end I come down and I say, There's $21 trillion missing from DOD and HUD. If that's not a problem, why is it a problem that we only need $5 trillion to make sure our pension funds are fully funded?
Exactly.
Right? Right.
Exactly. So one,
So there's
go ahead.
no, you know, it's there, there's no basis in law to simply disappear $21 trillion out of DOD and HUD. And there was no legal requirement in law to give $24 trillion plus to the banks during the bailouts. And if you take those two numbers, you know, you quickly get up to $50 trillion. The $5 trillion of underfunding on the pension funds is only 10% of that amount, right?
So, do you think we can get that money back? Is it a
I know
real
we can get that money.
how?
First of all, that money didn't, you know, that money didn't get burnt up. It went someplace. So it was invested in assets. It was transferred. It was, you know, and we now have assets and technology and other things which are very real. And we also have large corporations and a New York Fed and their member banks who are liable for the for that money and for affecting illegal transactions. So if you look at a world, you know, when you transfer 50 trillion into somebody else's pocket, there's 50 trillion of assets in somebody else's pocket, and there's legal liability for $50 trillion of illegal transactions, or you know, whatever the number is. So can we get that money? Yes, absolutely. Not to mention the fact that if you can print 24 trillion out of thin air for the banks, you can print 20, you know, 5 trillion out of thin air for the pension funds, okay? So
And we transfer those assets to us, print the money based on those assets, and we solve the pension problem.
right. So there are many different ways of addressing this, but first you've got to change the narrative. You know, there's a narrative that says, oh my God, this is a terrible and frightening crisis. You know, $5 trillion of underfunding. Well, wait a minute. If 21 trillion missing from DOD and HUD is not a big problem, why is 5 trillion a big problem? You know, so let's, number one, we've got to get our perspective on the math. That's number one. But number two, if you look at how this situation got created and the underfunding got created, what it says is that there is a serious lack of integrity in the governance structure in portions of the pension fund system. Not everywhere. There are many pensions that are run with great integrity and are, you know, not underfunded and are doing just fine. But there is a serious lack of integrity in the governance structure, and that is what has to be addressed. And that governance structure problem is not just in the pension funds, it's in a political system that would say that there's a pension fund crisis when 21 trillion missing from HUD and DOD is not a problem.
Well, how do we address this crisis of behavior when, I mean, 2008, when we just saw this money going out, now you're actually documenting and showing all these facts that this money's gone, and it seems like we never get traction. How do we get people to
Well,
realize that this is just not okay?
I think one of the things, it's funny, I have a great ally who I've been telling for years, you know, if you want to stop the shenanigans, you have to cut off their money. It's like a car that's out of control. You have to stop putting gas in the tank. And in fact, this year is a campaign year, Sarah, which is there are many different ways that we can cut off the money. But again, before you can talk about all the different options you have to do that, you've got to shift the narrative. And a campaign year is the fabulous year to shift the narrative because you have all sorts of opportunities to get together with, you know, in your county, in your state, in the local races, and start to have these discussions. Now, if you look at the end of the pension fund story, the last section is, you know, what do I do? And I go through the steps that each person has to take because, in fact, if you look at each individual, our unique circumstances are very different depending on what pension funds we are or family are beneficiaries of, what states we're in, and what the sort of funding and underfunding is. So the devil is in the details here, and what I encourage people in the section about what do we do is that each person has to look at their unique circumstances. So we have to come at this bottom up, both by place. You know, it will impact all of us as state and local taxpayers, because there's no doubt, with rare exception, it's going to have an impact on services, and it's going to have an impact on state and local income and probably property taxes. Anyway, so take a look at that section. The article is at pension.salary.com. Take a look at the section to look at what each one of us should do. But if 5 to 10% of the pension fund beneficiaries or taxpayers who are impacted this year in the campaign come to the town hall meetings and start talking about pension funds and their pension funds and how we're going to deal with pension funds, we're going to have a revolution. And there are many different ways of getting the money shifted, but it starts with changing that narrative. And that, so the narrative I want to stop is, oh, I'm not, you know, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to blame the victim. You're bad. You didn't save enough. Wrong. You know, you've been harvested financially in many, many cases. And you need to understand that, and you need to turn the tide back. So the goal of the pension fund piece and all my writing is to help you understand that so you can start to change the narrative. And the place to change your narrative is with your state and local officials. That's number one place to change the narrative.
And you think with the baby boomers, there's going to be such a large number of people affected that this is going to say, okay, enough is enough. We're pissed.
Well, I think there's 5 to 10% of the population who has the skills, the knowledge, and the will to do something. Now, here's what's interesting about that 5 to 10%. If you look at the other, you know, if you look at any county or any company or any enterprise, it usually breaks down to what I would call, you have 10% of the people who are the natural leaders. You have 80% who will follow around who's ever in charge. And then you have 10% of what I, you know, what I really call, I call them slugs, but but they're net energy minus. They drain the system. Okay, now the problem right now in many, many places is the slugs are in charge and the 80% are following them, which is why it feels sometimes so hopeless. The reality, though, is if you put the 10% net energy plus people in charge and the 80% follow them, bam, everything's working so fast.
It would make your head spin. I love that analogy.
No, it's so amazing to watch the situation, because I've been in charge of re-engineerings where, you know, you come in and everybody says, oh, it's totally hopeless. And then you just switch the slugs out and put the, you know, the 10% net energy plus people in charge. And the 80% people know in a flat second, they turn on a dime. They know exactly what to do, and bam, suddenly everything's working. It's amazing. And that is the case for every county in America.
Well, how do we identify the slugs? I mean, you know, they're pretty good at hiding.
Well, the slugs, one of the reasons the slugs have been able to really get control and stay in control is they have been able to use covert force. I mean, you come out of the telecom industry, and so you know a lot about the NSA and how surveillance has worked. But we've really seen the covert operations now using digital technology find many different ways of getting control files on people and manipulating people and using surveillance to manipulate people. And using entrainment technology and subliminal programming and mind control to we have seen covert operations get away with a huge amount in this country. And that's why it's so important to have an honest conversation about what are the covert operations and how do they work. You know, it was very hard when I first started talking with people about what was going on. You know, I would have people say, well, we have to go see our congressman. And I would say, your congressman has a control file. There's nothing he can do. And they would say, what's a control file? You know, they had no idea. So we've seen the ascendancy of people who are good at covert operations and violence, you know, basically get the upper hand. And now you see the 5 to 10% sort of looking up and saying, I can't avoid this anymore. I can't pretend it's not happening. I've got to deal with it. Okay, now how are we going to deal with it? And that's why we're having this conversation. We're all trying to figure out how to deal with it.
Yeah, I feel that too. I feel that, and that's who I target for my show, are those 5 to 10%. I feel that, but I think the mass awareness is not, oh my God, the slugs are in charge. And the worst of
Well,
the worst is are leading us.
the slugs are very, very powerful, and there are way too many of them. But they're not in charge, because if they were, you and I wouldn't be having this conversation.
Oh, that's a good point. Yes.
So they're not in charge, and there are many obstacles to them getting complete control. So I think the question is, how can we make life extremely difficult for them? And this comes down to trench, it's both spiritual warfare and trench warfare. Every position in every government, every company, every enterprise, every organization, you have to battle this out. And the question is, can we get the leaders in those positions and the slugs out? And, I have to say, getting the Clintons out was, the 2016, normally I don't pay a lot of attention to presidential campaigns. I think, by and large, they're a waste of time. Getting rid of the Bushes and the Clintons was a huge, huge accomplishment.
That's a
Now, it
big
doesn't
deal.
leave, oh, it's a very big deal. Talk about slugs. We were talking about, the slugs who've been running America for decades and have done enormous damage. So it was really marvelous to get rid of them.
Yeah,
Really
it
marvelous.
really was. And we still have a messed up situation, but they were so bad. I did some shows on Haiti, and I've done shows on the drug dealing, and I've done enough shows with people and experts who've been there to scare the heck out of anybody on.
So let me talk about what the problem is. I want to tell you, have you ever heard me tell the red button story?
Repeat, I'm pretty sure I have, but repeat it for listeners.
Okay. So I was giving a speech in the summer of 2000, and I was giving a presentation that later got written up as a very famous article called Narco Dollars for Beginners. And I'd been asked by a friend of mine to give a speech to a wonderful group of people called Spiritual Frontiers Foundation. They have a conference once a year to talk about how they can evolve our society spiritually. And very financially successful, literate, intelligent, very concerned, caring people. And I was asked to give a sort of funny, light lecture on how the money works in organized crime so that people could understand the intersection between organized crime and Washington. So I'm in the middle of the presentation. I'm talking about the Gary Webb Dark Alliance story about the and congressional testimony about intelligence agency narcotics trafficking into South Central LA. And at the time of the testimony, a spokesperson for the Department of Justice had told a reporter that I was working with at the time that the U.S. economy launders $500 billion to $1 trillion of all illegal monies every year. Now, the number, I believe, currently is much bigger. That was 1998, so it's 20 years later. So I said to this wonderful group of spiritually evolved people, an audience of about 100, what would happen if we stopped being the global leader in money laundering? So we had a little interactive conversation. They said, well, we the that money would leave the New York Stock Exchange and go to London and Zurich, and our 401ks and IRAs would go down in value, and we'd have trouble financing the government deficit because they wouldn't buy treasuries any longer. Because we'd not only offend $500 billion a year, but the accumulated capital. Think of the capital they control. And so I said, okay, let's pretend there's a big red button here up on the lectern, and if you push that button, you can stop all hard narcotics trafficking in your town, your neighborhood, your county tomorrow. Who here will push the button? And out of 100 people dedicated to evolving our society spiritually, only one raised their hand. Only one would push the button. So I said to the 99, remember, spiritually evolved people who want to help our society evolve spiritually, I said, why would you not push the button? They said, We don't want our IRAs and 401ks to go down, and we don't want our government checks to stop, and we don't want our taxes to go up. So what I discovered that day, Sarah, was that number one, we're financially addicted to, you know, whether it's warfare or organized crime, we're financially addicted to these activities. That's number one. But number two, everyone was afraid to go into the invention room and say, look, we're liquidating our society. If we're making money from getting our kids on drugs, you know, obviously that can't be a long-term plan. So this addiction to narco dollars is basically destroying the society. You know, how do we turn it around? So I said, you know, what I discovered is the problem was not that they wouldn't push the red button, but they wouldn't have a conversation about how do we turn the red button green? In other words, how do we make money pushing the red button? Because if we can make money pushing the red button, then we can push the red button. You know, and it's funny, I come from a world where, you know, the guys at the top never said, how do we get to Rome? They said, how do we make money getting to Rome? How can we fix it so everybody else makes money getting to Rome? Because then we can get to Rome. And so money was just a tool to organize, you know, different goals and incentives so that, you know, so the bees would swarm towards the honey, so to speak.
I love anyway, that analogy. So, yeah. One thing that I heard you say once is, and I think it's so true, is that you were working with somebody that was on, you think you're more on the right, and you were working with someone who was more on the left. And when you were talking about big picture abstract things, you guys were always at odds with each other. But when you went to go work on an actual project, it was amazing how you actually agreed on so many things.
We agreed on everything. We agreed on everything because everything was about how do you use time and money well in the short run, right here, now, at an intimate level. What you'll find is people who are that 5 to 10% net energy plus people, you know, we can all disagree, you know, enormously at a conceptual level. But we are all about getting things done and using resources well and ethically at an intimate level. And that's why it's so important to continually bring things down to an intimate level. And that's why I try to encourage people to do as much as possible locally, because that's where a lot of this divide and conquer programming breaks down. You get down to the intimate level. You know, and it was really funny because we at a philosophic level, we had extremely profound disagreements, very profound. But when it came to getting something done, we were there together.
I love that story because I think that's what we're living through now. If you can actually, let's just solve the problem and forget all of this other crap, and it'll be amazing how much we agree.
Well, if you look at the things that are causing disagreements now, so let's take a look at the latest school shooting. The official narrative, of course, doesn't make any sense, as is true in all these things. It's breaking down. As it breaks down and the central powers are losing control of the narrative, they're turning up the shriekometer. So they're doing more and more censoring. They're doing more and more suppression. They're doing more and more attacking. They're getting, you know, they're trying to appeal much more to emotion, and they're trying as much as they can to turn people against each other and, you know, scare people. And the fear porn is rolling out and the hope porn is rolling out. And, you know, it's like Baskin's Robin. There are 57 varieties of how to waste your time and eat up your emotion, you know, while they try and control the official narrative. But that's to maintain central control. And again, if you want to maintain central control of the money, you've got to maintain central control of the narrative. Now, here's their problem. So let's just pretend for a second that we're going to put you in charge of the control and concentration of cash flow at the CIA. Okay, so you're the number one bad guy. Your problem is if 99% of Americans want their check, and to get their check, you have to do war and organized crime. What are you going to do? Because the American people have made it very clear that they want their check. So I always say it this way. You know, at the end of World War II, the United States had 6% of the people and 50% of the resources. So George Kennan at the State Department said, you know, to keep this going, we're going to have to drop a lot of bombs, because that's a big, you know, unfairness. And so Barry Goldwater ran for president and said, we're going to have to drop a lot of bombs. And the American people said, oh, no, we're good Christians. We don't like that. So Jimmy Carter came along and he said, okay, well, we're going to have, you know, he sat in front of the fireplace. He said, okay, we're going to have to cut back because we can't hog the resources if we're not going to drop a lot of bombs. And the American people said, oh, no, we don't like that. That's not a plan. So the Bushes came along and said, you know something? Y'all are good Christians. Here's your check. Don't ask questions. And we said, okay. Because that's how you get, you know, so the folks at the CIA have been trained that the American people want their check and then they want their story. I call it the story of I am good. You know, and Oprah is the master of delivering the story of I am good. You know, so they're rounding up black people and throwing them into prison and genociding them. And Oprah's running around, you know, telling everybody the story of I'm good. Don't worry, be happy, you're good. So what they've heard from the American people is that the optimized point is they want their check and they want the story of why they're good and they don't want to know.
Well, do you think that's breaking down, though? I mean, and that's what we're seeing, obviously, is now that we have like Washington University at St. Louis, one third of our kids are being reported for being abused. We have this opium epidemic. The kids in the child welfare system, they're sexually abused at over 50%. I mean, we have all our diseases that are out of control. I mean, we're imploding.
So here's what's happened. The covert has grown and grown and grown and taken over. The organized crime has taken over. You know, one of the things that's happening with the economy and a lot of this technology, you can't run two parallel worlds. You know, when I was a kid, you had the covert world and you had the overt world, and they were very neatly separate. You know, and some people went back and forth, but it was, you know, it was kind of like multiple personality disorder, but it was parallel universe. Now with the technology, everything is integrating with everything and it's bleeding over. And what's happening is the covert is taking over. And the covert is so big that it's threatening the health and well-being of the whole society and the whole economy. And you're trying to keep that issue from coming to the fore by turning the shriekometer louder and louder and trying to control the narrative. It's not going to work.
Well, because they're making comments like they're trying to create a narrative that what we're seeing isn't real. And people are like, well, it is real, but they're trying to tell us it's not real. And people aren't believing it anymore.
Right. Right. Well, I get back to the 5 to 10%, because I think the 80% who kind of are ready to follow the 5 to 10% are looking at the 5 to 10% and saying, what should we do? And to me, that's one of the reasons that the campaign this year is an incredible opportunity, because one of the things people do is they put time in their time budget to spend time talking with neighbors and other people about the campaigns. So, and the campaigns are going to bring out more interest because everybody's so riled up after the 2016 presidential campaign. So I think you're going to see a lot of activity with people talking about, okay, what do we do? What's important? How do we do it? And the reality is, if you look at what's happening in employment, you're going to see a lot more people running for those jobs. You know, those are good paying jobs. So the competition for them at the state and local level is going to increase. So the time has come for the 5 to 10% to start to have really serious conversations about how we're going to turn this around. And you're not going to turn it around, Sarah, unless you cut off the money, which is why I keep coming back to the money. And that's why the state and local budgets and the willingness of state and local legislators to work with people locally to cut off the money to the feds. I would love to see state and local governments do escrows. So, you know, and if you want to fund the pension fund deficit, that's what you do. You just say, look, you guys owe us $21 trillion. We'll escrow our federal taxes, you know, under a county or a state-controlled escrow under the state courts, and we'll send you a check for the interest on the national debt, and we'll send you a check for the military, but all the domestic expenditures, we'll just keep that money here, and we'll use it to fund the pension funds and all these other things, and you know, and until we hit the $21 trillion you owe us.
Yeah, that would be great. Well, people need to realize that this money is actually missing. So I wanted to ask you. You
It's
had.
called, let me leave you with one term, common law right of offset. So let's say you owe me $1,000 and I owe you $1,000. I just do an offset and say, I'm not paying you $1,000. I'm just, I'm offsetting it against the thousand. Now you don't owe me that thousand anymore.
So, in order for people to get on board with these kind of solutions, they need to understand how much money has been missing. You have been working on this project for quite
Right.
some time, and that I have been enamored with what you've been doing on this because it's so critically important. And you had a professor that challenged you and said that you were a nut job or whatever, and this is BS, and then had his class look into it and realize, oh my gosh, she's right. In fact, it's more than what she was
Here's
saying.
actually here's what happened. This is an outstanding economics professor at Michigan State University, Dr. Mark Skidmore. Actually, what happened, he was listening to a radio show and heard me talking about the fact in 2015, 6.5 trillion had gone missing from DOD. And when he heard it, he said, that has to be wrong. She has to be wrong. It has to be wrong. And he had the integrity to just go get the Army financial statement and read it. And what he discovered to his shock and amazement was I was right.